Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today, again, we're joined by Paul Earnhardt. He's a commercial real estate expert, senior founding partner of Lee & Associates, and Eric Hernandez. He's the senior vice president and with Team Earnhardt. Gentlemen, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Paul, you've been around the business of commercial real estate almost exactly the same amount of time that I've been around residential. How does this downturn strike you in comparison to the ones you've seen before?
This one is much broader in its impact and its effects. I think the worst one I ever went through was the 90s, of course, in here in California and in the Inland Empire. We had an oversupply of buildings coming into 1991 that was about 4 years worth based on our prior years of absorption history.
Okay.
And, you know, lenders ended up taking back large quantities of properties. The RTC got involved in a lot of deals. And there was a quick liquidation that began, and values fell pretty rapidly. What preserved us out here was the influx of companies from L.A. and Orange County that were looking for ways to preserve their bottom line, and we became very, very inexpensive compared to those areas, and so they began moving into this area, and the difference is that I think capital never completely dried up. In other words, the S&Ls took the big brunt of it, but the banks were still there, still making loans. This time, capital seems to be much tighter across all segments.
So it really gets beyond the scope of the commercial real estate world and the residential. It's a systemic problem dealing with, okay, where do we get money to fund this fantastic deal?
Yeah, I tell you what I didn't hear last time that I'm hearing this time, and I'm hearing it from little guys and big guys, and that is their concern about receivables of not getting paid and preserving their own lines of credit that are being looked at much more closely or even shrunk in some cases.
Okay. Eric, how is our oversupply? Did we build too much again?
Well, I think just when everyone thought we had not, we're discovering we did in certain size categories.
Okay.
You know, in the marketplace out here, you do have a dynamic where, you know, the Western Inland Empire, you know, in and around the Ontario Airport area, for large industrial buildings is close to build out. So a lot of developers went east out to, you know, Redlands, San Bernardino, Moreno Valley, and Paris, and some of them were very active and built, you know, large speculative industrial buildings down there that are now standing inventory. And you know, the vacancy factors out there are much larger than on the West End because there was not a, you know, large base of buildings to begin with out there.
You know what happens with us, Bruce, is that this market is such an aggressive development market. And the developers build to two key statistics, absorption and vacancy. And what happens is when the music stops abruptly like it did this time, it's like people going through the windshield. You know, it's the momentum doesn't stop. And so we have all this product that was predicated on what absorption and vacancy was, and it still keeps getting built. It's too far along the path to stop. But the absorption and the vacancy does, and then if that rolls back, all of a sudden you go from what was everybody thought was an imbalanced market to a way out of balance market.
Right.
Now, also, I would think that they were building those buildings predicated on some kind of rent projection that no longer is accurate. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. If I'm going to appraise a commercial property, what are the components of that appraisal? That, you know, cap rate and income, are there, discuss if you will, and here's where I'm going with this. I think we're going to have a vacant building glut. How do you appraise a vacant building in the commercial world? What is it worth?
Well, once again, in our last segment, at the peak of the market, buildings were getting appraised based on sale comps, and income was not considered as a really serious factor. Now it's reversed. Now they're only appraising on potential income value, and they're not looking at sale comps. And if you look at income values, income in relationship to what building prices still are, and especially in some areas, and it's worst as you go out of the infill areas, then those numbers get scrutinized even tougher. So a 215 corridor is looked at much, much differently than an Orange County is.
Now, you said potential income. Now, they still will loan on potential income on a vacant building rather than actual?
No. If you want a loan on a vacant building, you're either going to get a very low loan to value, hard money kind of a deal, or you're going to have to demonstrate a tenant.
Okay. Owner-occupied, is that still good?
Owner-occupied, they'll make the loan on, but they're going to appraise it on an income stream basis as opposed to a pure sale basis, depending on, you know, where you are. And like I said, as you get closer into the more dense areas where there's not a lot of vacancy nor a lot of potential for inventory, then it loosens up a little bit. But when you get out to areas where there is more potential, especially where there's a land component that may get sold cheap and the whole market reprices.
Okay.
I was going to ask you, are you seeing that on the residential? I mean, certainly when you go to value a house, if there's a large tract of finished lots that are being sold at 20 cents on the dollar, that's got to be a market changer for you.
Well, honestly, our price has flown past. You could get the lot for free. Forget the bare land and, you know, the development and so forth. Right now, if someone called me up and said, Bruce, you could have 100 lots, I would take them but know that I'm a decade away from building on them.
Yeah.
I would be lot banking. Forget land banking.
Yeah.
You can't even...
You don't even want the land. All you want is the completed infrastructure. That's where the value is.
Oh, absolutely. And we get to see that almost a weekly basis, a major project that's gone under. The lender has it and has no place to go with it. Years ago, the city of Paris approached us with about 50 finished building lots. They actually had to foreclose on as a tax. The bill wasn't being paid. And they offered us the finished building lots for free, with the only catch is we had to build them out inside of a year. And it couldn't pencil because the cost was literally about 40 or 50% higher than I could buy a similar house for. And we're there now. We're buying 1985 inventory for $60 a square foot.
Wow.
So you certainly can't build on it and make a profit for that.
I'm not even sure you can pay the permit fees anymore.
No, see, that's the thing. We've reverted to such a price. Now, you know, it's interesting, and this I wanted to get on another subject too, but this is in the segment of time that we're coming up on, let's say the next decade, we got a big pile of people that will retire. And I think these prices that California is going to get to, or already is at in some cases, will ultimately attract a huge amount of migration, ultimately. It's the next 2 years that are going to be pretty ugly. So the question to you is, unemployment, how drastically does that change the commercial real estate picture if we get to a double-digit unemployment?
I think in our case it's going to be significant. It's a two-edged sword. The one thing nice about industrial real estate in Southern California is that it doesn't matter if the economy gets really bad, people still need their day-to-day living things, groceries, towels, toilet paper, whatever. And that's what's in these warehouses. And if you look at if you look at warehouses on an aerial, they're a really small piece of the overall zoning scheme. But having said that, we've built 100 million square feet of additional space out here over the last 4 or 5 years, and that space was built based on a demand model, based on a consumer having an unlimited amount of credit to spend on everything he could get his hands on. The question now is do we have a structural supply, or to put it in a more negative term, do we have a structural vacancy that could last for some time because of that? And so you've already seen the early weaklings are already out of the game. Linens and Things, Levitt's, Bombay Company, those buildings are on the market now because they've been vacated. I don't know how much more of that is to come, but I would suspect that even a Walmart may not be renewing some leases on some of their large space holdings. You know, there's going to be an amount of that. And as unemployment obviously impacts, people are not working, they're not spending, and if they're afraid of not working, they're not spending.
Eric, when you have a vacancy like that that comes up in a mall or a strip center like a Levitt's, that breaks the lease, of course. Does the releasing or the new lease lessor or leasee, does he pay a lot less than the his neighbors? Is that what's going on now, or is that not yet true?
Could potentially. A lot of it will depend on how motivated the landlord is. You know, what we're seeing right now is a good example might be there's a furniture company out east in Redlands. They leased a pretty large building about maybe 2 years ago. They have put their space on the market for sublease at a rate that is very, very aggressive. So that lease rate, you know, immediately was a nickel or, you know, 15% less than what everybody else was paying in that particular market because they were a motivated sublessor.
Right. How are the mall owners doing? I'm just curious. You know, you got Mervyn's going out. I just wondered, are they a stable group of owners, or are they having some problems?
Well, we don't follow those guys too closely other than the largest one in the country. Shares have dropped by probably about 90%. That was General Growth Properties, that I think they're down in the buck something range today.
Yeah, and I've heard rumors that they're not them, but other mall owners are getting ready to do some declaring a bankruptcy.
Well, and once again, that goes back to our earlier conversation about, you know, you talk about $100 billion of commercial real estate loans. I'm not sure that that's inclusive of lines of credit that may be coming due to some of these developer owner types, or the short-term paper that may be coming due on lines of credit that their assets no longer meet the covenants.
Now, the covenants, let's just talk about that for a second. Because I teach every once in a while, I study some things to a ridiculous extent. So I actually read the loan docs that I signed when I got a home equity line. And I was quite shocked at the flexibility of the lender, what they could do to regain their money or stop access. On the commercial side of things, are they ever dictated to by powers over them saying, okay, you guys need to rein that in and now?
Oh, yeah. No, I know that. I mean, and we're not on the borrowing side per se, but we've been on the project side enough to know that the project partner or the financing portion of it has a huge amount of say in what's going to happen when things start to not go the way they anticipated. And some of those loans have covenants in them that say you'll maintain this loan to value, or if your balance sheet deteriorates to X, you know, you're in default, those kind of things.
Is there, I guess what I was also getting at, is there any governmental control that looks over that whole process and says we need to now stop making that loan entirely?
Yeah, but that only occurs after it's too late.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Well, they might
right.
consider that, you know, I mean, residential, we've had some interesting problems come up. We know of people who thought, okay, I'd like to have access to that money, so I'm going to write a check on my credit line and put it in my account. The lender, when they noticed what was done, they literally went in and sucked the money right out of the account, paid off the lines, and closed the lines down.
We haven't had anything like that occur. that I've, at least not that I've heard. I mean, I that may be possible somewhere.
Yeah, that's just kind of scary stuff.
That seems kind of that seems a little overreaching to me.
Yeah, that's I was wondering if they were in partners with the IRS or something. But anyway, Eric, when companies relocate, is California gaining or losing that decision? Are they losing companies out of here, or are we still gaining companies in?
You know, it's kind of been a back and forth tug of war. A lot of the manufacturers that did not have to be here left in the last decade. Furniture is a good example of an industry that, you know, if they didn't have to be here, you know, they're pretty much gone. Interestingly, if you could look at state to state, we are seeing some companies that were back looking at Southern California because they wanted to be closer to the ports, and the high cost of fuel had maybe had them reconsider their decision on where they wanted to be. In fact, Paul, you might speak to one deal.
Well, it's a double-edged sword. If you don't want to be in California and put up with the bureaucratic nonsense and, mm-hmm. and the taxes, you know, all of the things that get dished out of Sacramento is anti-business, period. And you don't want to be here unless you have to be here.
Right.
And the only reason that you have to be here is you're fitting some kind of on-demand delivery model, or the cost of your product logistically, your profit margin gets destroyed by the logistics cost of not being here. So if you have somebody that has a product that is coming through the port and half of it stand in Southern California, where most of the population of the 11 western states resides, you're going to be here. Your logistics costs don't allow you to go anywhere else. If you're making a product, you're probably willing to go to Texas or Arizona or anywhere else that's a friendly state that doesn't, you know, but once again, that's always a fight against the logistics component. Where's your materials coming from, and where's your finished product going?
Okay.
So we have companies moving here now that we're working with that fit that model. We have moved companies into California that were manufacturers that came here because they were distributing to Walmart. This goes back years ago. We had a plastic chair manufacturer who came in and was one of the largest manufacturers to move into California in the mid-90s. And the reason they came here is they were originally making the product in Arkansas, selling it to Walmart, and hauling it here. Well, they sold the chair for $3, and it cost them $1 to get it here. And they didn't have many employees because it's a fairly automated process. So they relocated to California.
Eric, when people when companies relocate to California, do they usually lease first, or do they buy?
I think that just depends on what the company typically does in other places. I don't know if necessarily being in California would affect their decision to rent versus buy.
What about this particular market? Are they leaning toward leasing as opposed to buying now?
You know, there are some very aggressive landlords out there right now to get their buildings leased.
Correct.
So it's a pretty compelling story for someone, unless they are a manufacturer that, you know, is going to be in a building for a very long period of time, where they want to control the real estate.
What's the length of time in years or months that commercial real estate usually demands? So if I'm a new tenant, what's the length of time that's going to be expected that I sign up for?
It varies by size, Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason it varies by size is the cost of fixturizing a building goes up by size. So a guy that's going into a 30,000-foot building might be comfortable doing a 3-year to 5-year deal.
Okay.
A guy going into 300,000 or 400,000 feet is going to spend over $1 million just getting his racking and fixturization, and he wants to amortize that cost and be more stable over a longer period of time. Those leases typically are a minimum of 5, and generally in California, not much longer than 10, with options.
Was in the last year of the boom, was there a lot of building that was on spec by people that were just intending to resell it for a profit, and have they kind of been left holding the bag?
Yes.
Okay.
Not just selling, but leasing as well. And there's a huge amount of product, as Eric alluded to earlier, that was in the entitlement process. One of the issues that we have as you're well aware, is you don't just go out and put something up out here. Something that you're going to put up is a 2-year process, and that's the problem. Is that by the time you start and get to the just to the construction phase, the world can change on you substantially.
You know, it's interesting you say that because, you know, I don't understand some of the warning systems that are in place. They're so short, and they're advising their customer has such a long horizon. I just wonder. I know that they're paying a fair amount of money for the advice, and sometimes it doesn't seem too timely. We had an interview a few weeks ago where there's a company that puts out information, and it's a projection on the next, you know, the areas that are going to be dangerous for lenders. And their report in the third quarter of 2007 had no California or Florida cities in the top 10 dangerous areas.
Wow.
So of what use is that? And now, they're 100% of the list.
Unfortunately, I think the entire marketplace, whether it's real estate, stocks, bonds, pick anything, I think there's very few individuals that are willing to step out on the limb and say, this is going to be screwed up 18 to 24 months from now. I think everybody looks at current statistics and tries to justify their decisions or sell whatever they're selling based on the current statistics, and that's on what has happened, and not necessarily on what's going to happen. Your interview with Peter Schiff's interviews, that one of which you had, and his other ones, were right on point where he's projecting, and they're ripping him apart for it.
Right. Yeah, he didn't live a very comfortable life in the interview world in 05 and 06, that's for sure.
No, but he's having a blast now.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Well, now, yeah, you're right, though. They were literally almost laughing or mocking him, you know.
Oh, not almost. Not almost. Thank goodness for YouTube. You know, you can watch the experts just lambast him for his ridiculous opinions, and now, you know, they're the one that are sitting there going, oh my gosh, this all unfolded.
Well, as you and I had lunch a couple times, and we went out and bought his book after we heard him on your show, and we've read his book, and, you know, the reality is that you guys, people that go out and say this is what's coming at us, bear some risk of being wrong, and maybe somebody doesn't make as much money, so they get tagged as bad guys. But clearly, you know, looking back, 2020 hindsight, not much was missed there.
No. All right. In every downturn, smart money finds a way to find some great deals. So where do you see opportunities in this market over the next 24 months?
The first opportunities that will surface will be land, and then they'll be followed by small to mid-size, especially office product, which is, once again, we're not office specialists, but you don't need to be one to realize how overbuilt it is, both small and large buildings.
I'd like a call on one of those, please.
there's quite a bit of them out there, and there's some first class stuff, and you know that demand has fallen off sharply, and that supply has risen sharply. The industrial property side of it, on the mid to larger buildings, that won't materialize. Those deals won't be screaming deals for at least 12 to 24 months, and that's going to be a result of what happens in these capital markets. If liquidity becomes available, that'll get somewhat buffeted, but the rents have fallen, and there'll be some good values there. Land will be the first, though, because land's a liquidation, as you know, once the lender realizes there's a long horizon on it.
That's right. All right. Well, Paul Earnhardt, Eric Hernandez, thank you so much for joining us and filling us in on what's up with the commercial market in California, and hopefully we can do this again.
All right, Bruce. Thank you.
Look forward to it.
Do you mind if I give you your contact information?
No, go ahead.
Okay. The phone number to reach either Eric or Paul is 909-989-7771. Okay. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
All right.
Take care, Bruce.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.